Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news. Monday evening again. Edwin is back, and Edwin, Big Brother is watching you.
Big Brother, little sister, Uncle Tom, and and Auntie Mary. They're all watching us, Martin. You know, smile, you're on candid camera, as they say.
Yeah, this was pretty interesting. And as you say, you went to an open house and you noticed a camera in the corner of the room. Who was watching who?
Oh, this is the thing, right? And this is a little bit of a dilemma, because there's really no regulation, is there legislation other than the Privacy Act? And I mean, I know it's you can't record. There's a difference between recording voice and recording images as well. But should the owner of the property have told the agent, so that the agent then empowered, or do they have to then tell the people attending the open for inspection? I mean, I believe that it should be always declared, and it should be made known, because we are, I don't know if you were around Australia at the time when Mr. up the Windsor Road from Bookham Hills, and Let Me Do It Right For You, when his car dealership was busted for recording, eavesdropping on conversations that were held by prospective buyers of Holden vehicles. So, I mean, is it the same now? And this is really a discussion that needs to be had.
It is an interesting question, isn't it? And I notice that in some shops, they actually make a point of saying, we've got CCTV in operation, and around some properties too. But as you say, the legal position is a bit flaky, frankly. And actually, when you think about it, you've now got people with cameras in glasses and cameras that can be miniaturized and all those sorts of things. So, you know, I guess you've got to be assuming that, anything can be filmed, which is a bit concerning.
This is, and this goes back, to like, as you said, I mean, that the cameras could be anywhere. You could be recorded. A good mate of mine, he had his cameras going, and he was watching the open for inspections. Didn't notify the agent that he was being recorded, so he can then see if what the agent told him happened at the open for inspection, whether it matched up with what he saw through his CCTV. And one of the cameras was at the front door, and he was able to listen in to the conversations held with the agent and the prospective purchasers. As I said, you're really skating on thin ice, potentially. But look, this is a conversation that the industry needs to have, and it has to be brought out into the open, because you've got private conversations between partners as they're going through the household, not necessarily talking to the agent like I was. There was nothing untoward that I was speaking with the agent about anyway. But I just noticed that the cameras were present. So you've got to go into every inspection, open house inspection, with that in mind. That as you say, Big Brother is watching you. Or smile, you're on candid camera. So you've got to go in there, and you got to be restrained as to what you say, how loud you speak, or what you do. I thought about this idea approximately 8 years ago of setting up cameras around open house inspections. But that was for the purpose of working in an area where there was a lot of valuables around, and you just didn't want to. You only have to give your name and phone number when you're going inspect the property, right? I mean, how do they know it's the right phone number? How do they know it's the right name? You're not really, they're not really requesting, which agents can request further and better particulars in order to allow somebody in a private residence, but they don't. So you don't know who's coming in or not. You know what they're going, whether they're going through private drawers, whether they're going through opening up robes or the like. You just don't know. You just got to take it by chance. I mean, it's not common for any pilfering or anything to be stolen. You don't hear much of that. But I would say that for the purpose that I was thinking about it in about 7, 8 years ago was for security reasons, but to advise people that the cameras were on. Especially in areas in homes that you've got a lot of old style antiques, and you just want to keep a closer eye on why some families take the little the kids and let them run riot is beyond me. But each to their own. You just need that extra pair of eyes. So look, it is something that I feel it is necessary to have, but it needs to be disclosed and it needs to be upfront, and the proper signage needs to be and it needs to be shown and displayed.
Absolutely. And of course, things like Ring cameras there on front doors and all those things are part of the story too. But I suppose we should move on and talk a little bit about the Australian property market. I made a show called The Australian Property Horror Show Continues. And of course, we've now got the Catality data. Australia's housing market downturn widens, they say. Sharp downturn expands. Major markets decline. Regional areas weaken. Sellers adjust to falling demand. This is the latest from Catality, of course, and you can see there that pretty much wherever you look, there's a little bit of an easing back. And interestingly, even Perth over the last quarter is down just a little, minus 0.3%. Well, that's not really much, despite the annual 20% 0.5 rise. And it is fascinating to me that we are seeing this broadening out, of course. On the graphs, it's pretty clear. You can see it easing back there, both combined regionals and combined capitals. And here is the more detailed analysis that they provided. I also note, interestingly, Edwin, that the rentals, annual change in rents are still rising. So in Hobart, 8.3%, but Darwin up 11.1%. Even Sydney up 6.1%, so that's more than inflation. Melbourne, 5.2%. That's houses. Apartments, a little bit different. But again, still strong, and I still think that the story of rents is not being fully told. To my mind, Edwin, the rentals part of the picture is very, very significant. But when you look at the coverage, it's quite interesting. So we had things like house prices continue to slide across capital cities. Of course, they just sort of spelled it out again. Or here we go. Top-end property prices hit hardest as housing slump deepens. And they talk about the movements here. Again, slump, well, I suppose it depends on how you define a slump. But for me, one of the most interesting takes on all of this was not just on the prices itself, but also on the listings. And this is what Louis Christopher put out. He hasn't done his media release on the total listings for July. But total listings jumped, he said, nationwide by 30,000 properties. Here are four Sydney regions that we should look at. Sydney's southwest, a jump of 11.4% in a month. Sydney's CBD, a jump of 6.7%. Sydney's West, an all-time high. And Sydney's Hills District, an all-time high. So listings, well, look at. But I also thought this take was quite interesting from Alex Joyner. Despite the headlines, policymakers, particularly the RBA, do not owe those employed or invested in the housing property market endless growth any more than it does in any other sector. But he said, that said, maybe as we move closer to the Victorian election and further falls in Melbourne prices occur, I suspect the temptation for either side to promise to step in will become too much. So I think there is this political undertone. And then, of course, the auction. Well, the auction clearances were pretty low. Auctions, copper hammering as clearance rates nosedive. This is focusing on Sydney. And here is the latest data that I covered. And finally, just before I hand it back to you, Edwin, remind people, New Zealand. New Zealand, interesting counterplay. Over there, again, further falls, down from peak 17.7% across the board, 26.5% down in Wellington over 5 years, and the headlines there, New Zealand housing market faces biggest down phase in decades. So the question, Edwin, is, are we in for a little blip, a big blip, or no blip at all? And that, of course, is the big question, isn't it?
So So I started, I'm chatting along with AI and getting used to the whole AI thing. And I put this table together with information I was able to get and talking to some of our avid followers. And look, and these are the figures, these are the numbers. I mean, everybody looks at historical stuff. And so I said, okay, let's look at the corrections, and let's look at the recoveries that I've been involved with since I've been in the real estate game. And then I started, obviously, telling AI to along with the help of one of our followers to feed in the information, and we pretty much got this, which I think is part of one of three tables, and I think spells it out right in front, like, well, what's happened over the last 30 or so years. And you look at the corrections, you look at the corrections from 1989, then you look at the recovery, and all, we also looked at the economy, the population growth, completions in terms of dwelling completions, and we are obviously the last two the last two sets of numbers there that we don't know, because we don't know what the recovery or when we're going to recover at all, and what the gain may be from the bottom. But right now, when we look at the correction there on the left-hand corner with the in red, we're at 3.7%. This is in the Sydney in the Sydney market, right? So yeah, and you look at the correction of 2004, 2006 went down to 8%. Then 2008 to 2009 again 8%. 17, 19, where we were, where you and I were mapping that out, and we knew that even a lot of agencies were on their knees on the third, fourth credit card just to stay afloat. There wasn't a lot of transactions. Properties were going down in value, but there weren't a lot of transactions happening. And when there's no transactions, there's no stamp duty, and there's no stamp duty, there's no and also there's no commissions for the industry. So the industry suffers, no different to where it's placed at the moment. So then you've got stimulus that happened along those periods as well. Strong stimulus, all sorts of grants and all sorts of government stimulus, which is what you and I are saying is going to be one of the levers that are going to be, that's going to be pressed, or pushed, very, very soon. 2022, we had the RBA tightening cycles there, but then we started having record migration, and you start looking at the recovery. So, I mean, I think it's a big call at the moment to for people to say that we're crashing, the sky is falling down, because this is all black and white. And these are numbers, these are figures, that we pulled out from the ABS, the RBA, and a lot of other sources in order to compile this table. But I think, Martin, the next table, sort of splits it up a little bit more, and we start looking at the interest rate hikes as well. In the early 90s, they were very high, in comparison to where we are now. We also look at the construction. It was relatively strong and high up to 2017, and now it's been falling, and now we're basically it's stagnant. So, and that starts painting a different picture as to what people are predicting that is going to happen. Now, with that also, I wanted to map out the population growth versus construction, versus building or housing construction, and it says a lot. So visually, the tables, I believe, is where I start. This is why I personally find it very difficult that we're going to see the drops that a lot of people believe that we're going to get, because of the counters that are that are at play as well. As I said, is it, you've got high immigration, you got very low to almost very, very stagnant construction costs to replace a dwelling are just skyrocketing. So they're my figures. They're the thing. That's what we look at, and obviously we also look at these sort of figures and charts for each area of Sydney or suburb in Sydney that we're looking, for homes for our clients. So based on Louis's charts and Louis's graphs of tables and numbers, he's calling that there's going, out of what is it? Out of 636 suburbs, four have had more listings than ever before. Or even if you want to say LGAs, I mean, there's 34 LGAs or thereabouts. So it's not a lot when you compare it to the rest. Now, obviously, old mate, Yo-Yo Tom, Tom, he's already saying that all the agents that he's been talking to over the last week, contrary to last week's trumpet that he was blasting, now he's saying that all the conversations we're having with a lot of agencies over the last week is that they're not getting a lot of calls for agents aren't being called to do CMAs or comparative market analysis. In other words, getting listings on hand. So that starts. For me, it starts to flag the dropping listings on market like we saw in 2021. So for me, what's at play at the moment is 2021 2.1. So it's the pandemic all over again, because as people are fearful and they don't see the expectations that the agents have told them, and they're not getting the expectations that they saw the neighbors get 2 months ago, 3 months ago, 4 months ago. Well, if they don't have to sell, they won't sell, Martin. They'll wait. They'll wait for for better times. But when you've got, and people say, well, are we going to have better times in this market? Well, when you start looking at those tables and those that you showed earlier on, we start looking at construction, it's not really happening. Immigration, it's at an all-time high and growing. So the question then is, where have all the buyers gone, right? Have they disappeared all of a sudden? I don't believe so. I just believe that they just got their hands in the pockets and just waiting. A lot of people are just waiting for the dust to settle. And we'll see when the dust settles, we'll see what actually happens. And I think that's going to be the opposite of what people are truly believing. Now, I did this this historical look at the market corrections, just to put the figures out there for our followers and our viewers. As I said, we look at markets on a what's happening today basis when we're looking for our clients. But this, if this is any indication of how things are going to play out, I don't necessarily look at past 2020. Past 2020, I look at the trends from 2020 to now. As to what's happening and how it plays out, because there are different, there are a lot more there's a lot more meddling post 2020
government
than there
meddling.
was.
Yeah,
exactly. Government meddling.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of it.
No, absolutely. And there are lots of different. I sometimes talk about the three-body problem, which is very difficult to model all of these because there are so many different parts of it all pulling in different directions, and therefore it's hard to know. It comes back, I think, partly to demand and supply, which means, well, how much new stuff is being built? Well, not a lot at the moment because it's quite difficult, as we'll see in a second. On the demand side, that's definitely faded at the moment. So a lot of first-time buyers are now saying, well, I'm not going to buy now because I could probably buy cheaper later, and that may or not be true. We've got property investors who are now thinking, well, maybe that's not a good time to invest in property. And there are alternatives. You can put term deposits away at more than 6% at the moment, probably even more given the fact that the financial markets are a bit twitchy at the moment. And the expectation, of course, is potentially for higher interest rates ahead. People are still in some debate about whether the RBA will lift or won't they lift. and the latest data, pulled in, well, probably two directions, to be honest, because, you know, on one hand, you could argue that the inflation data was a little bit softer. And so Lucy Ellis at Westpac has sort of walked away from the RBA possibly lifting rates now. We've got the petrol price change, of course, which we'll touch on in a second. But it's also worth highlighting that Michelle Bullock earlier in the week, last week, said she didn't know what the board would do. If inflation is not coming down, then the board is going to have to make some difficult decisions in terms of raising interest rates. So it's definitely not done. And I think Matt Barry also had quite an interesting observation to make here about the fuel excise rebate, which of course is coming off. They've actually lifted it as well, because twice a year it's marked to the CPI. So not only is the old 16 cents coming back, but it's actually going on a bit higher too. So the cost of fuel is going to be another factor in all of this too. So the point is, there's a lot of complexity in here, which makes it quite difficult to really make a call as to how things are going. All I think we can do is to say, one, you've got to look locally, because different markets and sub-markets are still behaving differently. Louis actually, I think, recognises this in his listings commentary. And also the fact that there is a different supply-demand story in different suburbs, in different locations. And the other angle I look at is the credit story. So NAB came out and said, well, their mortgage applications are dropped about 15%, which is not a surprise on what I've seen either. There is definitely a bit of a hold-up at the moment with regard to that, and the private credit data for June, which came out at the end of last week, showed that there was a little bit of a pullback. But it's still pretty strong. So overall lending, this is the total book lending, is still well above inflation. We will, of course, in a few days get the new loan data. It only comes out a quarter from the ABS now, so maybe that will tell us something. But all up, I'm not sure that we can tell a hell of a lot at the moment about what is going to happen, because there are so many variables. Not going to happen. What's going to happen in the Middle East? You know, is it on? Is it off? I don't know. It is very, very interesting to see some of these conundrums. But I've got another little conundrum for you, Edwin, which is I've noticed on the bottom of your slide, Property Solutions Architect. What the hell is a Property Solutions Architect? Never heard that before.
Well, I've started a new career, Martin. I've started a new trend. I just don't want to be called the real estate agent anymore. I'm the property solutions architect. Yeah, it's all about putting together solutions for people, whether they're buying, whether they're selling, whether they're renovating. We would like to say that we're designing a way in or a way out. And helping, assisting our clients, doing a lot more than what your typical real estate agent would otherwise do. So that is why I've now come up with a new path as a property solutions architect. So anybody who wants to become a property solutions architect, just call me. I'll interview you.
I love the term, because what it is doing, it's turning the conversation around from "I want to buy a property" to say, "What are you trying to achieve? What are the elements that you need to pull together? You know, property. You know, the quality of what you've got. You know, there may be some construction or other things you want to do." It puts a completely different lens on the conversation, which I love. So I approve. I think it's a great title. I think we should see that a real estate agent should move from just flogging a dead horse. And by the way, just on flogging a dead horse, I've had three conversations the last week with people who were in negotiation with regard to property purchase. In each case, these were private viewings, so it wasn't open house. These were actually properties that were open specifically for the people looking, right? And then in the negotiation, magically, another offer, a higher offer, came out of the woodwork. Right? I'm smelling a rat. I don't know what you think, but could it be phantom counterbidding? We saw it at auctions. Could it be being done in private treaty sales as well? And of course, it's not, that's not legal, is it?
Been done. Look, it's always been done. It's just a strategist deploy, and you'll often get the emails or the text messages. Oh, we've received an offer of such and such, and our client is contemplating on accepting that offer. Are you prepared to go ahead? Or it's words along that line. They all use the same. It's the same strategy. But people should not be. That's not what people should be concerned about, Martin. People should be more concerned about the shit that they're buying, and what they think they're getting into. I mean, I've just had a good friend of a client that didn't want to use our services, and they just went and stung themselves badly with a property that I could probably have bought for about $150,000 less than what they offered. If I was involved in negotiations, not only that, but because I would have made them more aware of the fact that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to that property, just by looking at the photos on Domain and Real Estate, I could ascertain, and that was confirmed by a building and pest report that they went ahead and got. And this is what's unfortunately people are thinking: oh shit, I'm getting a great deal here, but you're not really.
No.
You got to think of the you got to think of the post. Post-purchase expenses, and if you thought something that was going to cost $100,000 to rectify, multiply that by 1.5, or in some case by 2, to get to the real to get to the real mark to get to the real money, things are just going exorbitantly overly priced. But you have to yeah, that they have to, they're things that you can't get away from from fixing. Your wet areas, your bathroom areas, and your kitchens and that, and then they're not cheap, and it's all the ancillary services that come along with it. It's not just a matter of replacing the old kit, putting in a new kitchen for an old kitchen. Then you got to check what's behind the bloody things. Most of the time, there's they've still got asbestos fibro sheeting behind them, and it's all broken and cracked and all sorts of issues, right? And it just adds on. It's all plus plus plus. And the trades now, they're not blinking when they tell you that it's going to cost you an extra $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to your $15,000 original quote. That's just the nature of the game right now. So this is what people have to be very, very careful of. And this is why I've come up with that, with that terminology, that term, because we like to give them, we like to say that we're designing, if I can use that phrase, designing a solution into a property or out of a property, and looking at, looking, because there's a lot more to it. Yeah, so sort of it was one of those epiphanies that I had, one morning where I was saying, "Fucking down."
No, very good. And talking about specific issues, here's a couple that you've called out over the last week. The first one was mold. So this actually wasn't an apartment, and you reposted this, which was a significant issue with regard. I think it was a tenant actually, and the property manager was. And landlord was blaming the tenant for not adequately ventilating the apartment, they have a duty of care to keep the apartment clean. But as you, I think you said, a lot of mold issues are really because of ineffective mechanical ventilation, water ingress, et cetera, et cetera. This is a really, really, it's a killer problem, isn't it?
Martin, and it kills you. It kills your budget, and it kills, and it will, literally kill you as well. Or it'll make you very, very sick. When I say it kills your budget, because there are not the rentals. I mean, it's a very, very tight market, and we're going to get to a situation where, for example, where my son just settled on a principal place of residence with his new wife over, and what they're paying for the mortgage. They said, "Dad, we sort of settled last week, and when we went and did the pre-settlement inspection, he said, Dad, you wouldn't believe it, but the I was talking to the managing agent, and they said that they were going to increase our rent by $200 a week, which put them in a, which now puts them an extra $200 a week puts them at $50 less." Than what they were going to what they're going to be paying on what they just purchased. And that's what we're getting, Martin, in a lot of places and a lot of properties in the lower brackets, around the million mark. You're getting now the rents would just about cover the mortgage or come very close to covering the mortgage. So this is where we're getting. So this is so when in this Jessica was was hit with a $100 rental increase. I think she said she's paying $800 and she's now just got a $100 increase in an apartment that she shows in the video that. Yeah, it's literally the built-in wardrobe is just full of moisture, a lot of condensation, and that's not natural. That condensation is that there's something happening on the other side of that or that party wall or wherever that the adjoining wall is to on the other side. You have to investigate that. But this is where also a lot of people, as I put in the post there, if you can see the black spores, you're already breathing in the bad shit. It's the white spores that you got to be the black spores aren't that as not as deadly as the white ones that you don't see and you're already breathing it. And as I put in the post there now lo and behold I used to have a YouTube channel years ago almost 12 years ago called Oz Real Estate TV and I started posting a lot of this stuff these findings that I was when I used to do a bit of work with Property Observer and there's a video that I did in an apartment in Homebush this mate of mine that specializes in mold infestation and mold treatment of houses and apartments and the like. And we put the UV light in this kid's bedroom, and there were more mold spores on the fluffy toys that the baby slept with than you could see in the black spores there on the cornices of that screenshot there. It was dreadful. So at that time, we were managing that apartment. And as soon as we saw that, we just called the landlord and said, "Listen, these guys have got to go. They've got to. They've we got to place them elsewhere." So we found other accommodation for them until such time that the whole place was basically, let's call it disinfected or treated. But even then, until the strata dealt with the main issues. No one occupied that apartment. But you're not getting that sort of service now, right? What you're getting is a rental increase. You're not getting any help. And the tricky part, this is the tricky part about the tribunal. The way that the tribunal determine whether or not it's a landlord issue or a tenant issue will come back to the periodic inspections. It will come back to the cleanliness of the dwelling, and that's the main determining factor for the tribunal, which is, in my opinion, which is wrong. Now, the mechanical ventilation that in 99.99999% of high-rise apartments that have been built over the last 15 years, I can tell you now, they comply with the NCC, but they do not they're not adequate for the way for our lifestyle. I mean, you're expected to leave your windows open during the day so that that you can get the ventilation through the apartment. Yeah, try to do that in an area where you're going to get a lot of break-ins. You can whistle Dixie. And then when you've got young families that are now not drying the clothes on the balcony or downstairs, going all the way downstairs, and there's no common areas to dry, you get given a dryer. So you're drying your clothes throughout winter. You're drying your clothes, the washing machine's going off. Then you're drying the clothes internally. You're cooking at the same time. You've got the air conditioning on, and also to, I mean, and you've got the showers running, and all that condensation stays within the confines of the apartment. Of course, you're going to get all these issues. So the tip in this case is to, if you start getting issues, you start seeing issues, make sure that you tell the property manager straight away. But as I said, the unfortunate thing is, Martin, that if you can see the black spores, you're already breathing, you can most likely you're already breathing in the really bad shit. And that's and it's all over the clothes. It could be on the other side of the property, where you see it. They're able, so they travel. So this is what I posted out there. And if anybody wants to, I've got the link up there on my X. It's an old I think when I used to do some reporting for Property Observer, both on the magazine as well as we started doing with Jennifer Duke on like on YouTube, but I never followed through with it. But yeah, the video's there, and it's really alarming.
Absolutely. And of course, if you are looking at a property to buy, again, it's very important to check the mold and that sort of stuff. Asbestos, we've touched on before. That's another factor, of course, from people. You know, there are 26 or 28 different forms of asbestos in houses. And you should assume potentially most houses have it, even more modern houses, because of the fact that the imports from China can still include asbestos today. So that's a problem. Another one which you highlighted was the trip problem. Again, this was actually, I think, in the context of a rental property, but of course it may not only be a rental property. The point is, of course, that well, if you do have a trip hazard, who's responsible? Is the landlord going to see to it? And if not, what happens?
Well, this is the segment that we could call ka-ching or payday, right? Look, what's happening is under the new the minimum standards in terms of under the Residential Tenancies Act that came into force, a couple of years ago. Now there's been a lot of crackdown in the Melbourne area and Victoria with regards to the minimum standards, and landlords and property managers have to adhere to the minimum standard criteria with regards to dwellings. And trip hazards are a major aspect of a rental property, and there's been a lot of claims. Now, this particular one, I can check. This is live and effective right now. It's currently at play, and I posed on my on X. I put two photos up, and I basically said, which one of these is the one that's going to get a big payout? Just because you've got fluorescent paint on the trip hazard in pathways doesn't necessarily negate the fact that you're going to be liable should something happen to the tenant, or if you've got something that's, let's say, 30 millimeters or 40 millimeters, there's undulating footpath or walkway into the house. Now, in one of these instances there, one of the well the backdrop is the tenant had been complaining about the trip hazards, and the landlord hasn't looked at them favorably. Just said, it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing." Lo and behold, 3 weeks ago, the tenant's missus just fell over and broke both her arms, and now we've got this at play, and it's going to be a huge potential huge claim, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, there was a claim that they got settled last year with regards to a claim on an open house inspection, where an attendee of an open house in a rainy day slipped in a driveway and fell and damaged the back. She was compensated, I believe, $640,000 from that accident, and all because the agent did not notify the attendees that the driveway leading up to the front door would be slippery when wet, and it was drizzling at the time. Now, that, and there's a lot of other matters in NCAT that are in there and out of NCAT that get settled before they get heard. A lot of people won't know about them unless you're actively working within the NCAT departments and become aware. And we certainly, because of Dusty's work in that area, in that arena, we're privy to a lot of information as to the matters there that are going through. So it's all to do with the minimum standards, Martin. And another aspect of the way the minimum standards that are affecting the rental properties in Melbourne. One of my colleagues that has an investment property in Melbourne just got hit with a $6,000 bill to upgrade the main switchboard. Look, As I said before, I've said a number of times on our show, I'm not against the minimum standards. I'm all for it. It was just the way that they got introduced, and they just went, all in Victoria, and the way that they got rolled out. But New South Wales, can't be, we can't say that it just got sprung on the landlords of New South Wales, because New South Wales have more or less had 2 years to prepare. Landlords have had about 2 years to prepare from what we saw happening in Melbourne. And this is what's, and a lot of this is now at play, as I said, in ANCAT, with regards to trip hazards is a big one. Mold, obviously, there's a lot of claims against, in getting rental reductions as well. And obviously, a big one is asbestos insulation. Glazing is going to be a very, very big one, where a lot of the properties are old homes that have that don't have the safety glass, nor do they have any notices around the glass or labelling around the windows, especially the sash windows that often get stuck. The those really old, badly painted sash windows that that get the timber swells up, the timber frame swells up in winter, and you're forever trying to open them up, and bingo, they shatter. And when that glass comes down, like razor blades, and it'll shred your hands, your arms. It's very, very dangerous. So, and if tenants aren't made aware of these things, or they're not, landlords and property managers aren't taking positive action or effective action to safeguard the tenants' well-being, well, they're in a lot of trouble. And that's now at play, very much at play. And a lot of this stuff is now being recorded in Melbourne, Victoria, and the same thing's now going to happen here, particularly now that the fair trading have put on a lot more bodies, foot soldiers on the ground, and checking on a lot of this compliance. And as I said before, Martin, we've had 2 years to prepare, and now this is at play.
Absolutely. Very important warnings there, I think. And we're going to see a lot, I think, a lot more of these issues bubbling along. Remembering, of course, that many property investors are struggling to try and balance the costs of the property versus the income they can generate, despite putting the rents up. The costs of everything is going up. And we saw that this week with the story about the tradies. And this particular construction project, now the cost to build a Sydney mid-rise unit now tops $1 million, driven largely by high labour expenses and the nationwide deficit of skilled workers. So the materials are going up, the labour's going up, the costs are going up. And those cost pressures, of course, are hitting everybody, whether you're renovating, whether you're trying to fix something, or whether you're actually building something. This is not good. It's not a good story for the construction industry overall, nor for the property market.
It's not. And this goes back again, it goes back to the beginning of our show, where we're talking about the headwinds that are, or let's call it the mattresses that are going to cushion this correction as well, which is there are going to be more and more high-rise developments around Sydney that are going to be uninhabitable. Why? Because once the lifts start going, you can take up to 2 years to get the bloody things fixed. And not only that, but there's a lot of issues that a lot of these apartments are facing, with the ventilation from the basement areas, because of the electrical ventilation is just not coping, and the cost to replace a lot of that mechanical, that electrical ventilation in the let's say second, third basement. It's very, very expensive, and when people don't have the money to front up, with the special levies to get things repaired, well then, things just deteriorate more and more. It gets to a point where they can't be, they're not fit for purpose, and that will be, let's, if I can use the word, that will be condemned, and you won't be able to literally live in. And so when you've got more and more, and there's a lot more And this is why I think this is why they got rid of David Shoebridge, because he was identifying more than what the New South Wales government wanted him to identify. Because if it was up to him, I'll tell you now, I would say 70% of the high-rise developments around Sydney would be shut, would be vacated. But then you got to ask yourself the question, Martin, what needs to happen before the New South Wales government grows some cojones and starts going out there and really starts putting the rod to a lot of the developments and developers to get a lot of the rectification work done. I mean, they just, so you've got, yeah, we're going through a correction. Yes, there's a lot of balls in the air, and there's a lot of smoke about, and there's a lot of dust floating around. There's a lot of emotion around, but the fundamental principles is that there's a lot of uninhabitable property as well, and sooner than later, people. Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that people are living in a lot of these apartments in high-rise developments are living there because they've got nowhere else to go. It's very difficult for them to go, and the sad thing is that they're living in squalor, paying top dollar to live in squalor and live with all the, in a very, very dangerous environment. So you top that off by the simple fact that you and I have been talking about the cost of to build through our insiders in HIA and Bob the Builder, what it costs to build. We were breaking these news before the mainstream started picking it up, and they're only now up to where we were probably 2 years ago. And when you've got to factor in the cost to build, the cost of the cost of the land, then there's the GST that you've got to put on top of it. I mean, they're talking about that the developers have got to make a 15%. If you're thinking that you're going to be making a 15% profit, I mean, you're going to do your ass. The banks aren't even going to look at your project unless you're going to pull in, at a minimum, at best, worst case scenario, 25 to 27% profit at the end because of the contingencies. Because that 27% will just dwindle away with a quick change overnight with a geopolitical event or a policy change, and that's what we've been getting. So if construction is going to diminish, and as they push for construction with cowboys, well. But again, whether they push for construction with cowboys or whatever happens, or whether they fly in 2 million tradies from abroad, no matter where they come from now to completion, we're looking at, before we were looking at 3 to 4 years, now we're looking at 5 to 7 years before delivery of any project.
Absolutely. And to remind everybody that whilst the states have been targeted on building approvals, the real test is building deliveries, right, which can take a lot longer, and the build time is blowing out like you wouldn't believe for all the reasons that we've been talking about. Oh, and just one other thing before we talk about the numbers, Edwin, the AML story, the money laundering issue and the fact there are new rules and regs, nobody's actually stitched that into the conversation. But to my mind, the fact that this has come in at this time could be another reason why we are seeing weakness across the property market too. I wonder how long it'll be before somebody in the mainstream media joins the dots.
Yeah, look, and it's I'd love to get some of the accountancy firms that we talk to get them on our show because of what they're saying, and I'm talking about people that are in the know, and what they're seeing, also involved with liquidators and the like. It's really fascinating. Now, nobody really knows what's going on with that, but all that's done is create a lot of confusion.
Yep,
it's created a lot of confusion, create extra costs as well, and it may be a deterrent, but. At the same time, the I guess the interesting thing, Martin, The interesting thing, we can leave at this point with our viewers to ponder for the next few weeks. The interesting thing that the majority are saying is that for the now, it's creating confusion, but it's also just an information gathering process, and they're getting a lot of information from a lot of different sources. But what's happened is the statute of limitations does not lapse on any issue that may be found to be investigated in future. So in 10 years' time, they could still come back and knock at your door and say, remember that transaction that you were a part of, 10 years ago? I sort of remember. I mean, that's the 10 years ago. We found out that there was a bit, a little bit of diddling here and a little bit of diddling there. So now we're going to call you into to you know, so this is where a lot of this has created a big mess. So I don't know why it's been bought in the way it has been bought in. A lot of people can't make heads or tails. The industry is very confused about it. The AML service providers, where you register through them and you register and people do the compliance checks and everything through, they're having hiccups left, right, and center. People don't know what to report on. Yeah, so it's a mess. It is a mess that it's going to take. I think it's going to take another 12 to 24 months to sort out, but it's certainly created another. It's another juggling, ball in the air at the moment in relation to all the factors that are at play at the moment in the property arena.
Well, I think it's important, and I think it may have taken some money that was looking for a home to try and actually launder, and suddenly that money's not there. So another reason why people aren't transacting. We will see. Let's just look at the numbers briefly, Edwin. We start in the Sydney region. This is, of course, based on the domain definition of the Sydney region. And on the 27th of July, there were 25,343 properties listed, of which 11,457 were houses. Jump forward a week, 25,243, similar number of houses there. So we are seeing a little bit of, caution. But still up relative to last year.
It is. We're not getting the rises. I don't believe that we're going to get the rises that a lot of the commentators, and unfortunately, including Louis, is predicting or said last week that we're going to see over the next 2 to 3 weeks. In actual fact, okay, we've dropped 100, but it's still a drop. It's not a rise. So far, so far it's one point for me, zero for Louis. In that sense, but if we're keeping scores, but as I said, there's a from when the budget till now is when a lot of the agency agreements are going to be lapsing, and this is where people are going to either decide to continue on with the with keeping the properties on the market or pull them out. I'm still until you can convince me otherwise, I'm still of the opinion we're going to get a we're going to 2021 2.1 is very much on the cards. It's only a small drop, but it's not a rise like a lot of people are saying. And now, look, as much as I joke around about Yo-Yo Tom, even he's saying that his conversations with the industry is that they're not getting a lot of calls to do market appraisals, which means less listings in the coming weeks. So we'll see. Let's wait and see. Spring. Spring's still 4 weeks away, the beginning of spring. So we'll, time will tell, and that's what the show is all about. It's just presenting the numbers on a week by week basis, and just calling it as it comes.
Well, Melbourne, bit of a different story there. So on the 27th of July, 33,569 properties listed there, of which the houses were 23,291, an astonishing proportion. The next week, 33,750, again with large house counts. So the Melbourne story and the Sydney story is diverging.
So you've got a rise of, just over 200 new listings coming on market in Melbourne, and a drop of 100. I mean, again, they're not big numbers, but this is the difference, the difference in what's at play. It's for me, Melbourne's going to be interesting. I think Melbourne's really going to crater when if the redhead, the One Nation really start pulling some pulling some weight there. It's going to be really, 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 really interesting with what happens. But the bigger piece, as I said, with federally, because from a state perspective, you really can't. It's not like they can do anything about migration, but there'll be some sort of a pull. It'll be interesting to see what happens closer to November. We got the November elections. We might get a different trend. We might get a dropping listing numbers because people are going to be feel a little bit more confident that Melbourne's going to go in a different path. And a lot of the BS that they got pushed there in Melbourne with regards to investors, they whacking them over the head so hard. Maybe that a lot of that's going to be walked back. Who knows? But for now, all we're seeing is the numbers going up, but Sydney's totally the opposite. Which again, it goes back to the desirability of the place where people want to live at present time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think the change of leadership down in Melbourne ahead of that upcoming election will be interesting to see whether anything really changes. Of course, they're now talking about an inquiry into the building and construction industry, and particularly the big projects. So we'll see how that runs and what comes out of that. So I don't think we're going to see a significant change of trajectory in Melbourne, other than more of the same, certainly for the next little while. That's my opinion. We'll see how it goes. Let's look at Brisbane briefly. On the 27th, 4,823 for sale. A week later, 4,860. So a little bit of a tick. Again, it's worth highlighting that Brisbane is now looking as though the prices are beginning to slide as well. Auctions, very weak clearances, as we said, and more people, I think, are probably walking away from the auction route at all if they're going to transact. And here is the little chart that you've put together that shows there was a slight uptick from last week, but hardly any really.
It's on a slow burn. It's on a slow burn, and it's a number of factors. And one of the factors that the mainstream aren't talking about, which you and I have been discussing for years, and that is the education that they've been getting over the years from the different people that follow our show and from our different conversations, and assessing whether or not the auction campaign is really the way to go to get the best value for your property when you're looking from a sales perspective. We are where we are. Again, it's losing its shine, and these are the times where you really see the which agents really want to are really going to be working for you, and how quickly they will track. I mean, again, we saw Tom, voicing his concerns, the fact that the auction that he attended or that he was in, took part on over the weekend, he was zero bidders again. My question is still the same, Tom. Why the hell do you go? Do you go and front up at an auction where the agent knows that they've got no registered bidders? I mean, that's just burning your vendor. That's just no way to manage the product. And that is why people should call a. Should call the property solutions architect if you really want to get a better outcome for your property sale, rather than calling a real
Well,
estate
property
agent.
solutions architect. Now, who could that possibly have been? Let's look briefly at the rentals then. In Sydney, on the 27th, 12,512 listed, 12,422 the week later. In Melbourne on the 27th, 11,263. A week later, 11,133. So small falls in properties listed, but still lack of supply and very, very important. A lot of stressed people. In fact, I published in my post yesterday the latest on the mortgage and rental stress. Rental stress is still horribly high, unfortunately, for many people. And again, I still think we're not getting enough coverage more broadly in the mainstream media on the whole rental situation, the homelessness situation, which is still very, very significantly worse than it used to be. And ahead of the upcoming census, of course, I wonder how many homeless people will be missed in the census simply because they don't have a place of residence. So we're coming towards the end of the show, but you have a tip.
My tips are, for the single people out there, if you're going to start dating, start looking to date and making friends with tradies, because we're going to be the new millionaires, as we've been saying for over a year now, of the future. And what I am seeing on the ground and in the prices, how quickly they're jumping. Materials, obviously there's a consistency with that, but now that is now morphing into, some traders will just walk away from jobs.
Yep.
And they just don't give a rat's, Martin. They really don't give a rat's. On a project that I got called in to assist for one of our associates, they just sacked the plumber, and he couldn't give two rats. Because, you know what? Because he's got two, three other jobs to go to as well. That'll more than likely get more, and it's incredible. So yeah, so my tip is, if you're single and you want to mingle, start mingling and making friends with tradies.
Well, absolutely. It's interesting that a lot of tradies, I've noticed, are actually driving rather smart vehicles these days and seem to have quite a lot of money in the bank and, all of those things. So, yeah, you can see where the money is drifting to. No surprise what we've been saying over the recent times. But, it makes it a very interesting conversation. Edwin, thank you very much. As always, very interesting chat this evening. And we'll do it all again next week. Although I have to say, it feels more and more like we're doing it every day rather than once a week at the moment. I think, I don't know what's happened, that I'm being robbed of days, I think.
It's all the excitement, man. It's all the excitement that's happening out there, and you just gotta keep up with the left turns, the right turns, the ups and the downs, and as many say, it's a wild, wild west out there at the moment. Just be careful, folks.
Certainly not boring.
Definitely not.
Absolutely. Thanks, Edwin. See you next week. Take care,
man. All the very best.
Bye. Ciao.